It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. I have said repeatedly one of the great joys of being on the radio is that you get to talk with people with whom you really admire, people that you have studied, people that you've looked up to. But the really unique thing about working at WABC in New York and working on this network is not only do you get to speak to people that you really admire, you actually get to work with people with whom you really admire. And that is certainly the case with Rudy Giuliani. Not only is he probably the greatest mayor in the history of the city of New York, not only is he still, in spite of what CNN might say, America's mayor, he's a former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, but now he's one of the most successful nationally syndicated radio talk show hosts in the country, and it's really been a treat to get to know him a little bit over the last few years. Mayor, it's great to talk with you. Thanks for taking the time. I know you've already had a long day.
Always a pleasure. I'm glad to get a chance to talk to you, too.
Mayor, by the way, you know, so many politicians have struggled to make that transition from politics to radio. One of the few people that did it successfully was probably Ed Koch, but all sorts of other people have tried. Your friend Mario Cuomo, obviously, not successful. So many other people have tried to make the transition and not been able to do it successfully. What is it about you and your personality that you've been able to make that transition? How are you finding the transition?
Well, first of all, I enjoy it immensely, and I did it before I was mayor. So not professionally, but occasionally. I substituted, believe it or not, for Bob Grant.
You know, I remember so that, actually.
When I was U.S. attorney, Bob took a great interest in all of my cases, particularly the mafia cases. Bob was an Italian with a very strong feeling that the mafia had hurt the reputation of Italians. So the minute my cases started, he started putting me on the radio. We became good friends. And then all of a sudden, a couple of times, he asked me if I would substitute for him. So I didn't know what I was doing, but they showed me. And then I substituted for Hannity, who was also a close friend and a student of my best friend, actually. And then when I was mayor, I had my own show. It was only once a week, and it was for 1 hour, but I thought it would be useful to have people call the mayor and be directly able to complain to him. And boy, did they.
I remember some of the ferret calls alone are legendary.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I would always start off. I think I stopped after a while. But, you know, having sort of been trained by Roger Ailes, and my co-student at the time was Rush Limbaugh. So Roger was training me to be a candidate and him to be a national radio host. And we would sometimes be in the studio together. I watched that process. It was fabulous. And then sometimes Roger would take a break when he was getting ready, you know, getting me ready for a debate, and he'd call up Rush and talk about the monologue and how to do it. And one of the things about Rush that I think people don't realize that made him the legend that he deserves to be is a great sense of humor.
Mm.
The left wingers who just rejected him thought he was some kind of a mad right wing. In fact, he was extraordinarily intelligent, made very, very rational arguments. But then he was funny as hell.
Oh, I mean, I think really that's what people miss about Rush. I think Rush could have, when he did shows about football or,
he was a comedian.
He was a brilliant entertainer. And that's what I think a lot of the Rush imitators over the years have sort of missed, is that how important that element of entertainment is. Mayor, I want to pick your brain on a few issues that are in the news. Most important, Saturday. I know you're a diehard, longtime Giants fan. Giants, Eagles. Eagles are heavily favored. Give me your objective analysis, not your rooting interest, in how you see Saturday's game going, Mayor.
For us to beat them will require an upset. You can go back to the Eli Giants, who had to do this twice. Well, one time, really. The first time they got to the Super Bowl and defeated the flawless New England Patriots. they had to win three games on the road, and then all three they were underdogs, and they did it. Now, you know, you can say, fine, but this is not the same team. What they showed me last week, however, I'm hopeful. It's a young team. Nice thing about young teams is nobody told them they're supposed to lose. I don't think they're afraid of anybody. They played the Eagles pretty damn well last time. The Eagles are a terrific football team, maybe the best, second best, third best in football. I don't know. I think we can beat them. I think their desire and their youth and their spirit, and then two great talents. I mean, the quarterback has turned out to be – he could be right now the best running passing quarterback combination of both I've ever seen. He takes more disciplined runs than even Fran Tarkington, and I love Fran. Maybe he'll do one or two panic runs a game because he has to, but he seems to know exactly when the play breaks down and he's got to take off. And I mean, he's equal to Barkley as a runner.
One of the things that you said during your presidential campaign, which was very controversial, and it had nothing to do with radical Islam or Roe versus Wade, you said that if the Red Sox made the World Series, you'd root for the Red Sox because of your loyalty to the American League. And you drew the comparison that because you're a Giant fan and you root for the NFC teams, that you're rooting for the NFC in the Super Bowl no matter what. It seems like over the years, a lot of those lines, AL, NL, NFC, AFC, they've sort of...
Not as firm.
Not as firm.
I would have like a preference for the NFC team. Back in the old days, at the very beginning of the situation, when the AFL and NFC, I was very much an NFC fan. Although I did root for the Jets because they were, and of course they very quickly broke the jinx. But mostly I would root for the NFC team. But sometimes I like to play, like the Pittsburgh Steelers. I always like the Steelers.
Gotcha. So it's not a hard and fast rule.
On the other hand, I always like Green Bay. So I would, if Green Bay were there in the Super Bowl, I'd root for them not just because of the NFC, because I kind of like Green Bay. Maybe it's the old Lombardi connection. He was a great Giant coach. Kind of like New England, too, because of Belichick. You know, Belichick won two championships with us. And shows great respect for the Giants. We're the only, I mean, I got really annoyed. I'll tell you a time I rooted for the AFC when New England played the Eagles in the Super Bowl. For two reasons. I hate the Eagles. So this is a grudge match. And number two, I wanted the Giants to be the only team to have beaten New England in the Super Bowl.
And I can understand, as a Giant fan, where you're coming from and where your heart is on that. Mayor, let me take advantage of your legal expertise as a former prosecutor and as an attorney for decades. These Alec Baldwin charges have a lot of people scratching their heads. Some people are celebrating. Some people are asking questions. He's been charged with involuntary manslaughter over this shooting that took place on a movie set that he was producing, Rust. Can you explain to folks what involuntary manslaughter is exactly and whether you think these charges were appropriate here?
First of all, this is like law school. Involuntary manslaughter is a charge that you bring when you don't know what to charge. You don't know what to charge. Because what the heck is, if it's involuntary, it shouldn't be a crime.
Right. That's what I think a lot of people are scratching their head about it. Those of us that are laymen.
An involuntary action is in order to commit a crime, a serious crime, you have to have what's called mens rea. You have to have the mental element. You have to know you're doing it, or at least you have to know what you're doing. But like if you now you could get into negligence, right? Like I think they really might have been able to charge it better or call it gross negligent homicide. Like if he shot the gun, right, and he pointed at her. You could say he was negligent to rely on the fact that someone told him there was no bullet in the gun. If someone didn't tell him there was no bullet in the gun and he just assumed it, you probably have gross negligence, and that's good enough for I mean, that's what they mean by involuntary murder. But there is actually something voluntary about it. You deliberately pull the trigger. I think this guy talked himself into an indictment.
Really?
I'm not going to even blame it on his lawyer because he's a bit of a screwball, right? And his lawyer, I'm sure, must have advised him to keep his big fat mouth shut. I mean, by and large, whenever a defendant opens their mouth, they walk into jail. I don't know why they don't listen to their lawyers and keep their mouths shut. The more they're wise guys, the more they like to think they can talk everybody out of it. So think of his stupid statement, he didn't pull the trigger. So that's got to get the cops and the prosecutors really upset. What,
right.
You think we're stupid?
Right, sure.
What happened? A little angel came down and pulled the trigger? Of course you pulled the trigger, jackass. The gun was in your hand. So now when you say that, I'll tell you, you know, they'll argue that he's lying. And based on his lying, he had an evil motive. Otherwise, he'd tell the truth.
So where do you think this prosecution goes? Do you think a conviction is likely? Obviously, you don't know all the evidence at this point, but what do you think?
Celebrity. That'll affect the jury. Either way. I mean, it's a wild card. As a celebrity, and I'm not even talking about his politics now. I'm talking about just being a celebrity. Some people adore celebrities, love celebrities. Some people hate them.
Mm-hmm.
And he killed an innocent girl. He gave an explanation. My goodness, I'd love to cross-examine him if I were the prosecutor. I mean, he's probably a big enough idiot to take the witness stand. Imagine telling a jury you didn't pull the you're standing there. The gun goes off. It shoots and kills the girl. It's obviously pointed at her for the bullet. I mean, the bullet didn't take some kind of circular motion, right? The bullet went in the direction it was pointed. The gun was in his hand. Nobody else pointed it. You didn't pull the trigger. Well, who did? I mean, what happened? I mean, did you get a twitch?
It's going to be very interesting to see where that case goes.
And then you say, why would a guy lie about this unless he deliberately intended to shoot her and he's trying to cover it up? I mean, they could really nail him pretty bad. And on the other hand, it's such a crazy case, a jury could just say, oh, gee, you know.
Right.
We can't figure this one out.
Yeah, no, it's going to be very interesting to see where that one goes. It's funny. I was doing a little research in preparation for this to see what he said about you over the years. And I found an interview that you did on CNN about 12 years ago, maybe 13 years ago, saying that you and Alec Baldwin share one thing in common, which is that you're both quite fond of the Kindle. My wife is so frustrated that our house has books upon books and upon books everywhere. She's trying to get me to transition to a Kindle. Help me out here, Mayor. How have you found the Kindle?
You want to know why I like it so much?
Yeah.
Okay. I actually just got the new one that you can write on, and I find it even better than all the rest because it's big. It's almost the size of a book. Look, I loved books. I never thought I would transition to a Kindle. I resisted it for 3 years, and then my friend taught me how to use it. And the reason I resisted it more than anything else was I like to underline.
Mm.
He showed me how to underline with the Kindle. And then I found out it does something else when you underline it. It keeps the underlinings in a little file. So now when I read something, I go back to my Kindle. I have a nice outline of the book that I read. I also, if I'm trying to remember something at some part of the book, I can go to my little outline and find it. So even when I start reading a book now, and I start underlining a regular book, I realize it's not going into my file, and I quickly get it on my Kindle. So I think that's why I felt the underlining got me to fall in love with it. And now that they've added you can write in it, now they have me forever.
Yeah.
Now I can write little notes in it. Because my books, if you give me an autographed copy of a book, I go out and buy another copy because I used to ruin the autographed copy.
You know, I'd
underline it. If I didn't like something, I'd write down, how did he write this stupid stuff? If I liked something, I'd say, this is brilliant, or I'm going to quote this. So the Kindle allows you to do that and keep it. I agree with you. I would still, I mean, if I miss books, I occasionally will just read a book, just for the heck of it. Same thing with newspapers. I mean, I read the newspapers every day online. And I can get through, like, the Wall Street Journal 5 times quicker online than if I have to turn the pages.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's something about the newspaper, to your point.
Right now I have in front of me Epoch Times. Epoch Times is an online publication, but they do a once-a-week a paper, beautifully done paper edition. Comes out on Wednesdays. Frank, I look forward to it. It's the same articles that are in the – computer, You know what I do? I underline them and I cut them out.
I can empathize, Mayor. Believe me. Talking with Mayor Rudy Giuliani, hear him every afternoon on the radio and on Sunday morning with Dr. Maria Ryan, who's terrific. And she was more right than anybody on the DeMar Hamlin situation. She nailed that from the get-go. And
Watching the game. Well, not watching the game. I called her over. I was half watching the game, half reading.
Right.
And I heard that I didn't see the play. I saw the immediate replay. I heard the reaction. So I took my eyes up. I looked at it. I had Ted with me, and we're both looking at it, and we see the guy collapse. And when I looked at him collapse, I said to Ted, he's dead. I think he's dead. I mean, I've seen dead people, unfortunately.
Sure.
And I saw the way the body just collapsed and the way he hit the ground. I mean, it was like he flopped onto the ground rather than fell. So I called Maria over. I mean, the doctor, come on over. Come over. Look at this. And she said he had sudden heart attack. That's obvious. It's obvious what it is. I said, what are you? Sudden death. And I said, God, he's dead. She said, well, they could, you know, if they get to him right away, he's got a chance. But I don't know. They started to surround him immediately, the players. It was quite beautiful, right? And the medics got in there, but you couldn't see what they were doing. And she was really frustrated because she didn't know if they were doing the right thing
sure,
or not. It turned out
sure.
they were.
Yeah, no, well, it's a great show. I love the fact that you guys could go from talking about politics to talking about football to talking about criminal justice issues to healthcare issues. It really covers a lot of ground, and that's on Sunday morning. People should definitely check it out. Mayor, I alluded to CNN. I have seen a bunch of these promos for this documentary series. They're doing it about you, and I haven't seen it yet, but it's clear based on how it's marketed that it's very much a hit piece. I'm curious, have you seen it? If you have, what's your take on it?
First of all, I never looked at anything much about me, including auditory things. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes I do if I have to, and sometimes I do if I made a mistake and I have to correct it. But I largely do it, and it's over, and what am I going to do about it? I'll look at it if I have to clarify. I would never look at CNN about me or anybody else. What do I want to be lied to? I mean, I know they're going to lie constantly. I know the people they talk to. I know the people they talk to hate me, lie about me constantly. They go around telling people I'm a drunk. I drink moderately, socially. One article said I wake up in the morning and have scotch. I mean, I'd be a hell of a man if I did that. Wow.
And to be able to be on the radio by 3 p.m, you'd be my hero even more.
Working all my life, mostly, 14, 15-hour days. So I must be one hell of an alcoholic.
Yeah. Hey, that's...
An advertisement for being an alcoholic.
Got it.
I live to 78 years old.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. And whenever I've seen you, you seem to be as not only in great shape, but very with it mentally.
Write it. I mean, they write all kinds of stuff.
So
I mean, it's unbelievable. They have me taking money from people I'd never met. That's why the U.S. Attorney's Office, you know, they investigated me and they gave me a letter saying they couldn't find any evidence of anything.
Which is pretty rare, by the way. You know that as a prosecutor.
You realize they investigated for 20 years. They went through 20 years of my business. You know, they wanted to nail me for being Trump's lawyer. And you want to know why I know it's Trump's lawyer? Because they went and got my iCloud, and the starting date that they went to get it was the day I represented Donald Trump. And then they had it for 3 years. And they gave it up the day after I stopped representing Trump. Now, that's outrageous.
Outrageous, and a lot of Democratic attorneys and legal analysts have said the same thing, is the way that you've been treated as an attorney, both here in New York and in D.C. They suspended your license to practice law without so much as giving you a hearing. And I know my friend Arthur Idala's firm is representing you on that. How is that going? What's the status of that? The efforts to get your law license back.
We had a hearing on that, and if we had a hearing before any group of fair-minded people, the case would have been dismissed on the spot. But I don't know if you know the state of mind of most Eastern lawyers in the upper echelons of the legal profession, which is what bar associations are. I mean, they're basically lost their legal education to their ideology. I don't even understand the Constitution anymore. I mean, I was having debates with them over what is circumstantial evidence. And what I found was I was dealing with mushhead ideologues that, you know, that find Amy Comey Barrett not qualified because she's a conservative and believes that abortion is illegal because she believes it's murder. Therefore, she's not qualified, even though she's got an IQ twice theirs and has been an unbelievably prolific lawyer. So the ideology of the New York bar and the D.C. bar is left of left of left. And there can be no bigger devil than Donald Trump.
Well,
Why? I'll tell you why. Because they know he thinks they're a bunch of elite jackasses. And he's right.
Yeah, he doesn't make a secret about that. Hey,
he's right. They're a bunch of elite jackasses who talk to each other and have the foggiest idea what's going on in real life. The foggiest idea how they're destroying this country right now, electing this numbskull, this demented man as president of the United States.
I want to get
We got a guy in the White House who constantly introduces President Harris. And the press just, you know, looks at it, what the heck. A couple of weeks ago, he told this story about how his father came to him at his vice presidential inauguration and said, your Uncle Frank or John or James or got the Purple Heart and he never took it. You think you could dig it out for him and we have a little ceremony? Joe said, sure. He went and got it. They had a little ceremony. Uncle Frank or James or, I don't know, refused to take it. But then Joe prevailed on him and he took it. Beautiful little story. Except both of those guys, the father and the uncle, were dead for 6 years before he became vice president.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
And that, here's the worst part. He repeated it a week later after he was told it was not true, which tells me he's gone from what he always has been, which is a pathological liar from probably the day he was born, to now demented and delusional.
Yeah, his story about getting arrested trying to see Nelson Mandela keeps getting repeated as well, even though he's been called on that. Yeah, no, that's for sure. Speaking of former President Trump, though, one thing that's gotten a lot of attention in the last 24 hours is this memoir by Mike Pompeo, in which he claims in the book that President Trump told him to shut the hell up for a while about China. And
totally inconsistent with public comments. I mean, that Trump is the guy that got in trouble for saying it was Chinese virus, Wuhan virus. And he said it constantly. What, did he want to be the one to irritate Xi but not Pompeo? I mean, his public comments all throughout his presidency. I don't know when Mike says this conversation took place, but he sure didn't act publicly like he cared whether he insulted Xi. Maybe he was playing good guy, bad guy. How do I know? Either Mike is lying or Trump was playing good guy, bad guy, because no one has been more critical of Xi than Trump. And particularly about being the source of the, he's accused him of killing us. He's accused him of killing Europeans. He has consistently said it comes from Wuhan. He's been called xenophobic, racist over it. I don't know why Mike thinks this is even going to fly.
Do you think this is a way for him to carve out a lane if he ends up running against Trump in a primary next year?
Yeah, I worry about Mike Pompeo. I worry about him because in March of 2019, I gave him a full outline of the Ukraine bribe, along with witnesses that were being prevented from coming to the United States by his crooked State Department. And this has all been proven to be true now by the hard drive. I didn't have the hard drive then. And he played me along. He told me he was going to have it investigated, and he never did. He never did because he was afraid of challenging the State Department. He was afraid of taking on the ambassador who stopped witnesses from coming here and had them afraid she was going to have them killed. I don't know. He told me. I'll tell you exactly what he told me. He told me he was going to take her on. She was the head of the Lesbian Association. And I sat there and said, I didn't think our administration operated that way. So I don't have much respect for Mike. Mike could have put a stop to this damn thing a year before it happened, and he didn't. And I don't know. People got to take accountability for this. He elected to believe that I was some kind of liar, and the miserable left-wing creeps around him who have done such damage to America were telling him the truth.
They were jerking him.
I can't say the second word. And I'm going to tell you why he did it. He didn't do it because he was fooled. He's a smart man. He did the same thing at the CIA. Schumer really puts the best light on this. Schumer very, very openly said at the beginning, you know, Trump, you better not take on the intelligence services because they'll ruin you. Schumer was right. They will. And I was going to say Pence. Pence is the same problem. Pompeo never took on CIA. He's afraid of CIA. Did he change the CIA? Didn't do a damn thing to it. He kept it the same way it was with the same people. But he was afraid. He was afraid they'd ruin him because he wants to be president.
Mayor, how do you handicap a presidential primary contest with Pence, who you just mentioned, Pompeo, and Ron DeSantis, who a lot of other people are being high on, if Trump's in there as well?
Sanders is the only one there as a leader. Hard to get Pence alone without his wife. No, I mean it.
No, I've heard the same thing.
I never got to talk to him, which I guess is good about that whole the whole situation about his vote. But at one point, I was so frustrated. I said, "Well, let me talk to her, his wife. She makes the decisions." I've never seen a guy where his wife doesn't let him move 4 inches without being with him. Something weird going on. Pence, they almost dropped Pence from the ticket. Pompeo does a whole thing in his book about that, how Nikki Haley was going to get selected. There was a big movement in the party to drop him.
And do you buy that? Now, Nikki Haley did dispute some of that. Do you buy what Pompeo's saying about?
She tried to be vice president, no question about it. And there were actually, go back and you can find contemporary articles written by several Republicans pushing her as a much better candidate than Pence. They thought Pence was a weakling. This is long before the dispute over the vote or
that
Pence didn't do anything for the ticket. He had a very weak image. And given the fact that Trump was getting older, people would put more concentration on him. And they'd say, my God, we don't want to go from a strong president like Trump to a weakling like Pence.
It's going to be very interesting.
Pence put it out in the book. I mean, do I think Nikki Haley was trying to be vice president? People were pushing her. I can't honestly tell you if I know she did. Maybe I assume that she did, but I don't know.
I could talk with you all day, Mayor. I'm just about out of time, but I have to ask you about this. Yesterday in one of my local commentaries, I brought up the idea of another 2024 race of Andrew Giuliani potentially running as a Republican for U.S. Senate against Kirsten Gillibrand. What do you think of that? I know he takes your advice on political matters. What do you think?
Not about my son in particular. We'd have to talk about his personal life and all that. But I think at least we'd have a senator. Is she really a senator? Does she represent us? No.
She's like the invisible man. She might be like some of the former people that you used to put on the witness stand being the witness protection program.
I'm not even know she knows. I don't even think she's figured out yet how to pass a bill. Schumer doesn't let her speak. Sometimes she shows up for his Sunday press conferences, and I don't know what he does. I think how do you do that when you take somebody out of a photograph?
Yeah, airbrushing, right.
Yeah, you know the joke about Schumer, right? The most dangerous place in Washington is between Schumer and a microphone.
Yeah, especially on a Sunday, right?
Yeah, and you know, the Sunday trick is hilarious. I don't know when I first noticed it. I didn't really pay that much attention to politics when I was the U.S. attorney. I probably first noticed it when I was running for mayor. I said, well, how come this guy is generally, you don't get much press on a Saturday or Sunday. He said, well, they don't give him much press. This is when he was a congressman. He figures there's not much in the press on Sundays. And they put the stringers out in the second level people, and maybe he can snow them.
Yeah, you got to give him credit for that. Hey, he was smart enough to get his wife appointed DOT commissioner under some mayor. I can't remember who it was.
I appointed her DOT commissioner.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, I know.
And she was one of my best. She was one of my best appointments. She's a great appointment. She's a fabulous public servant.
Now, even Mike Bloomberg kept her.
Al D'Amato wanted me to fire her, and I told him no. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, that wasn't the first difference of opinion you and Senator D'Amato had, right?
I wasn't going to make her pay. I mean, I was in that race. I preferred D'Amato to him, but that wouldn't affect my judgment about my commissioners. That's why I don't understand these people who they suck up to politics. I mean, do your job and you're going to be fine. Like Adams is so worried about what the Democratic Party will think and what the Democratic Party will do. And so the Democratic Party had the answers to things. The country would be in a lot better shape than it's in.
Mayor, on that note, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm going to have you back. I'd love to do a whole hour with you sometime soon.
Yeah,
and maybe get you on the Mob podcast, too. That'd be great.
Yeah. You know they brought out about Rena, Salvatore Rena, who was the De Niro, who the guy who just got arrested, boss. When De Niro first went to work for him as a sort of an apprentice, De Niro, the guy who was just arrested as the alleged boss of the mafia, he really isn't, but he's a boss. His father was a boss in a little Sicilian town called Trapani, and he wanted his son to go further in the mafia than him. So he brought him to Salvatore Rena, nicknamed Toto, who really was a mafia boss because he probably, arguably, was the most vicious, most dangerous mafia member in 300 years. At one point, he killed 3,000 people, and he made sure everybody knew it was 3,000 so they'd be afraid of him. He got 3,000. He killed 3,000 mafia people to clean out his opposition.
Wow.
He put out a contract on me. It's one of the first things he did when De Niro came and he put out the contract because he was very worried that I was working with Giovanni Falcone, who was an Italian magistrate investigating the mafia.
Mayor, I got to run, but we got to do a whole hour on this soon. It's a fascinating
story.
I've been loving it.
Giovanni got fascinated, not me.
Mayor, thank you very much for the time. It's always a treat to talk with you. Let's do cigars soon. Let's go Giants.
Yeah, I'll be back. Don't worry.
All right. Mayor Rudy Giuliani, catch him on the radio 6 days a week. He's doing a great job. And on his own podcast, Rudy Giuliani's Common Sense. If you want to comment on any portion of our conversation, you can give me a call, 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Straight ahead.
Other Side of Midnight.